What we're going to do now is just read a short story by a black female author, and we'll just discuss it. And Jan Nairn is our reader.
And I'm just the reader. That's all. I have no specialized knowledge of this.
Okay. You mean you don't want us to ask questions after?
Don't. Yeah, I'm just reading the thing.
It's not necessarily what you would have written.
This is in dialect, and it's outside of my area of ability to put across. So I will read it as well as I can for meaning. The name of the story is Johnny Ruth, and it's by Becky Bretha. Is that how you pronounce your name? And it's a 14-year-old girl who is speaking, who is the narrator of the story. Summertime, nighttime. Talk about steam heat. This whole city get like the bathroom when somebody in there taking a shower and the door shut. Nights like that can't nobody sleep. Everybody be outside, sitting on the steps, or else dragging half their furniture out onto the sidewalk, kitchen chairs, card tables, even bringing TVs outside. Women folks, mostly. All the grown women around my way look just the same. They all big, stout. They got big bosoms and big hips and fat legs. And they always wearing run-over house shoes and them shapeless flowered numbers with the buttons down the front. Except on Sunday. Sunday morning, they all turn into glamour girls in them big hats and long gloves with their skinny high heels and the skinny selves and them tight girdles. Wouldn't nobody ever know what they look like the rest of the time. When I was a little kid, I didn't want to grow up because I never wanted to look like them ladies. I heard Ms. Jenkins down the streets one time say she don't mind being fat because that way she keep her husband don't get so jealous. She say it's more than one way to keep a man. Me, I don't have no intentions of keeping no man. I never understood why they was in so much demand anyway, but it seemed like all women can depend on them for is making sure that they keep on having babies. We got enough children in my neighborhood. In the summertime, even the little kids allowed to stay up till 11 or 12 o'clock at night, playing in the street and hollering and carrying on. Don't never seem to get tired. Don't nobody care as long as they don't fight. Me, I don't hang around no front steps no more. Hot nights like that, I get out my 10-speed and I be gone. That's what I like to do more than anything else in the whole world. Feel that wind in my face, keeping me cool as an air conditioner, shooting along like a snowball. My bike is light as a kite. I can really get up some speed. All the guys around my way got 10-speed bikes. Some of the girls got them too, but they don't ride them at night. They pedal around during the day, but at nighttime they just hang around out front, watching the babies and running them out. I didn't get my Peugeot to be no conversation piece. My mama don't like me to ride at night. I tried to point out to her that she ain't never said nothing to my brothers, and Vincent a year younger than me, and Langston two years older, just in case old is the problem. She say, "That different, Johnny Ruth, you're a girl." Now I want to know, how is anybody going to know that? I'm skinny as a knife blade turned sideways, and all I ever wear is blue jeans and a Wrangler jacket. But if I bring that up, she's liable to get started in on how come it is that I can't be more of a young lady, and 14 is old enough to start taking more pride in my appearance, and she's going to be ashamed to admit that I'm her daughter. I just tell her that my bike be moving so fast that nobody can hardly see me and wouldn't catch me if they did. Mama complained to her friends how I'm wild and she can't do nothing with me. She know I'm gonna do what I want no matter what she say. But she know I ain't getting into no trouble neither. Like some of the boys I know stole their bikes. But I didn't do nothing like that. I've been saving my money ever since I can remember. Every time I got a nickel or a dime out of anybody. When I was a little kid, it was hard to get money. Seemed like the only time they ever give you any was on Sunday morning, and then you had to put it in the offering. I used to hate to do that. In fact, I used to hate everything about Sunday morning. I had to wear all those ruffly dresses, the shiny, slippery stuff in the wintertime that got to make a noise every time you move your ass an inch on those old hard benches, and that scratchy, starchy stuff in the summertime with all them scratchy crinolines. Had to carry a pocketbook and wear them shiny shoes. And the church we went to was all the way over on Summit Avenue, so the whole damn neighborhood could get a good look. At least all the other kids be dressed the same way. The boys think they slick because they get to wear pants. But they still gotta wear a white shirt and a tie, and them dumb hats they wear can't hide their bald-headed haircuts because they gotta take the hats off in church. There was one Sunday when I must have been around 8. I remember it was before my sister Claretta was born, because right about then was when I put my foot down about that whole sanctimonious routine. Anyway, I was dragging my feet along 25th Street and back of Mom and Vincent and them, and I spied this lady. I'd only seen her that one time, but I still remember just how she looked. She didn't look like nobody I'd ever seen before. I know she don't live around here. She's real skinny, but she ain't no real young woman either. She could be as old as my mama. She ain't nobody's mama, I'm sure. She ain't wearing Sunday clothes. She got on blue jeans and a man's working shirt with the tail hanging out. And she's got patches on her blue jeans. And she's still got her chin stuck out like she's some kind of African royalty. She ain't carrying no shiny pocketbook. Don't look like she care if she got any money or not. Or who knoweth, she don't. She ain't wearing no house shoes or stockings or high heels either. Mama always speak to everybody, but when she pass by this lady, she make like she ain't ever seen her. But I get me a real good look, and the lady stare right back at me. She got a funny look on her face, almost like she thinks she knows me from someplace. After she pass on by, I had to turn around and get another look, even though Mama say that ain't polite. And you know what? She was turning around too, looking back at me. And she give me a real big smile. I didn't know too much in them days. But that's when I first got to thinking about how it's got to be different ways to be from the way people be around my way. It's got to be places where it don't matter to nobody if you all dressed up on Sunday morning or you ain't. That's how come I started saving money. So when I got enough, I could go away to someplace like that. After a while, I began to see that there wasn't no point in waiting around for handouts, and I started thinking of ways to earn my own money. I used to be running errands all the time, mailing letters for old Grandma Whittaker, picking up cigarettes and newspapers up at the corner for everybody. After I got bigger, I started washing cars in the summer and shoveling people's sidewalks in the wintertime. Now I got me a newspaper route. Ain't never been no girl around here with no paper route. But I guess everybody got it figured out by now that I ain't gonna be like nobody else. The reason I got me my Peugeot was so that I could start to explore. I figured I'd start looking around right now, so when I'm grown, I'll know exactly where I want to go. So I ride around every chance I get. Last summer, I used to ride with the boys a lot. Sometimes 8 or 10 of us would just go cruising around the streets together. All of a sudden, my mama decides she don't want me to do that no more. She say I'm too old to be spending so much time with boys. That's what they tell you half the time. The other half of the time, they get worried because you ain't interested in spending more time with boys. Don't make much sense. She want me to have some girlfriends, but I never seem to fit in with none of the things the girls are doing. I used to think I fit in more with the boys. But I seen how Mama might be right for once. I didn't like the way the boys was starting to talk about girls sometimes, talking about what some girl be like from the neck on down, and talking all up underneath everybody's clothes and all. Even though I wasn't really friends with none of the girls, I didn't like it. Somehow I mainly just ride around by myself. And Mama don't like that neither. You just can't please her. This boy that lived around the corner on North Street, Kenny Henderson, asked me one time if I don't ever get lonely, because he always see me by myself. He say, don't I ever think I'd like to have me somebody special to go places with and stuff? Like I'd pick him if I did. Made me want to laugh in his face. I do be lonely a lot of times, but I don't tell nobody. And I ain't met nobody yet that I'd really rather be with than myself. But I will someday. When I find that special place where everybody different, I'm gonna find somebody there I can be friends with, and it ain't gonna be no dumb boy. I found me one place already that I like to go a whole lot. It ain't even really that far away, by bike. But it's on the other side of the avenue. So I don't tell Mama then that I go there, because they like to think I'm right around the neighborhood someplace. But this neighborhood too dull for me. All the houses look just the same. No porches, no yards, no trees, not even no parks around here. Every block looks so much like other block it hurts your eyes to look at it after a while. So I ride across Summit Avenue and go down that big steep hill there, and then make a sharp right at the bottom and cross over the bridge over the train tracks. Then I head out on the boulevard. That's the nicest part. With all them big trees making a tunnel over the top, and the lightning bugs shining in the bushes. At the end of the boulevard, you get to this place called the Plaza. It's something like a little park. The sidewalks is all bricks, and they got flowers planted all over the place. The same kind my mama grow in that painted up tire she got out front masquerading like a garden decoration. Only seem like they smell sweeter here. It's a big high fountain right in the middle, and all the street lights is real old-fashioned kind. That plaza is about the prettiest place I've ever been. Sometimes something going on there, like an orchestra playing, or some man or a lady singing. One time they had a show with some girls doing some kind of foreign dances. They looked like they were all around my age. They all had on these fancy costumes, with different colored ribbons all down their back. I wouldn't wear nothing like that, but it looked real pretty when they was dancing. I got me a special bench in one corner where I like to sit, because I can see just about everything. But wouldn't nobody know I was there? I like to sit still and think, and I like to watch people. A lot of people be coming there at night to look at the shows and stuff, or just to hang out and cool off. All different kind of people. This one night, when I was sitting over there in the corner where I always be at, there was this lady standing right near my bench. She mostly had her back turned to me and she didn't know I was there, but I could see her real good. She had on this shiny purple shirt and about a million silver bracelets. I kind of liked the way she looked, sort of exotic. Like she maybe come from California or one of the islands. I mean, she had class, standing there posing with her arms folded. She walked away a little bit, then turned around and walked back again, like she waiting for somebody. Then I spotted this dude coming over. I spied him all the way across the plaza, looking real fine. Got on a three-piece suit, one of them little caps sitting at an angle, looked like leather. He comes straight over to this lady. I'm watching, and then she see him too, and she starts to smile. But she didn't move until he get right up next to her. Then I'm gonna look away, because I can't stand to watch nobody hugging and kissing on each other. But all of a sudden I see it ain't no dude at all, it's another lady. Now I can't stop looking. Then the one in purple shirt looked around real quick, but she don't look just behind her, and sort of pulled the other one right back into the corner where I'm sitting at, and then they put their arms around each other and kiss for a whole long time. Now, I really know I oughtn't to turn away, but I can't, and I know they're gonna see me when they finally open their eyes, and they do. They both kind of gasp and back up, like I'm a monster that just rose up out of the deep. Then I guess they can see I'm only a girl, and they look at one another and start to laugh. And then they just turn around and start to walk away like it was nothing at all. But right before they gone, they both turn around again and see I still ain't got my eye muscles and my jaw muscles working right yet. And the one lady wink at me, and the other one says, catch you later. I can't stop staring at they backs all the way across the plaza. And then all of a sudden, I feel like I gotta be doing something. Gotta be moving. I wheel on out of the plaza, and I'm just concentrating on getting up my speed, because I can't figure out what to think. Then two women kissing, and then they get caught and just laughing about it. And here I'm laughing too, for no reason at all. I'm sailing down the boulevard laughing like a lunatic, and I'm singing at the top of my lungs, and climbing up that big old hill up onto Summit Avenue is just as easy as being on an escalator.
Something that comes to my mind is how does she know? How does she figure out what her mom's getting at? I could never figure out why my mom was so confusing. She seems to have been able to sort it out, and how I was thinking while she was talking how our moms are so similar. And how she's kind of thinking as she's living, and I didn't. I just kind of...
Yeah, well, that's an idea.
That's what I was thinking about. And how I really, I guess the way it was written, I really was able to like her. I feel like I know her, and like her. When I feel that way after I read something, I like what it was read.
I guess she's very self-reflecting for a 14-year-old girl.
But if you're a 14-year-old girl who's different
from
other 14-year-old girls, I think that would be part of the quote. There's some obvious sexual awakening going on in these. One of the things that struck me is that she didn't like anything that was pretense or phony. You know, like the ladies who wear house shoes during the week, and then on Sunday you couldn't tell what they looked like because they were all girdled up and big hats and long gloves and that sort of thing.
I guess she didn't like it because she kind of felt a certain amount of pressure that maybe she should be that way.
And maybe a little bit of fear that at some point she too was going to turn into one of those stout ladies.
I think she's figured out what she's going to turn into.
I was interested in the fact that her relationship with her bicycle.
And
since I feel an affinity with my bus, home is my car. and I think of how I use a vehicle as a means of separation, isolation, solitude, power, control, and to see that, to hear that reflected in the story, because I think there's very little difference in her use of a bicycle and my use of an automobile.
Well, if there's anything that's going to keep her from being different than the other ladies, it's that bicycle. Mm-hmm. That's seems to be a real key to her personality. I mean, that freedom that she feels on the bicycle. So.
I was just thinking that she has to move out because there's nothing that she sees reflecting herself in her own world, you know, in her own neighborhood, her own place. So she moves out and she's looking for something that's going to be a mirror for her. You know. and see a reflection she recognizes. I thought that last paragraph was just glorious, you know, her energy, the energy that comes out. She, you can just see it pedaling up that hill. That's just wonderful. It's a wonderful image of a spirit liberator.
Her father's not there, right? She says, basically, there's men aren't good for anything but making babies anyway. And I found an awful lot of black women feel that way, regardless of their sexuality.
We get the feeling, well, it's said that there just aren't any men present. Mm-hmm. And when they walk into church, it's her and her mother and her older brother. And
you got quite an image of her feeling trapped when she's describing the weather in that very beginning. Mm-hmm. And her description of the weather cloying in on you as it does for all of us when we've been in that bathroom scene where,
oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't have any windows, the door is closed, and you're in this tight, confined little area, and you're just oppressed by the steam. And I think she, that feeling of being trapped or oppressed by her surroundings, mm-hmm. carried on. And again, the bicycle giving her that freedom to escape.
She's found her freedom from the oppression in different ways than others. The others moved outside, but she got on her bicycle and moved out of the whole community. And she's expressing herself. There's that rebel in her that's expressing herself always. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about that last ending, that last paragraph, because it was like all she'd ever seen of sexuality was oppressive. And all at once, this was a rebel. This is a rebellious expression of sexuality that just energized her. And
the laughter. I mean, it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And the shock.
Yeah, bubbling up.
I can picture myself, if I was older than 14, I was pretty naive when it came to girls. I knew guys, I knew about homosexual men. I had no idea that there were homosexual women. Not that part of my education had been completely neglected. And I can picture myself at age 14, if I were to see two women kiss in a passionate embrace, I had no idea how I would have responded. My laughter would have been quite nervous, I have an idea, because I would have been so totally at sea at that concept. And obviously she was too. She was stunned. But then her response to it was marvelous.
Did anybody make anything of that neighborhood and the kids with the long ribbons? What do you think was going on?
When the dancers in the plaza?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder about that, long ribbons in the back.
Well, it was just European dance. I thought, sounds Polish, maybe. Are they the ones that wear the long ribbons down the back and folk dancing? Sounds like just what goes on the plaza in Albuquerque. I don't know about other towns' plazas, but it's what went on in the plaza in Albuquerque.
But she makes no mention of their race.
No, not at all. No.
And she makes no mention of the race of the women.
I was assuming it was something out of an African tradition. It was just my reading.
Yeah, I had anticipated that there would be comment. You know, that this was, you know, the assumption is that she's coming out of her neighborhood and going into an upper class.
Mm-hmm.
White neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly she doesn't allude to color at all.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Origin. Just different. Just very, very different.
It
seemed like there was some foreshadowing with the scene of the woman that she meets. Mm-hmm. She and her mother meets, mm-hmm. and her mother never speaks mm-hmm. to her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a hint of the race of the woman in the blue jeans, though, because it says she has her chin held out like she's an African royalty, so she could assume that she is, but it's true, I had not even stopped to think that the people in the plaza, there's mm-hmm. no reference.
No reference.
Yeah.
You know, if I were that age and I saw two women kissing and they were of another race, I would think it's a weird racial thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't mention that at all.
No.
So mm-hmm. I was kind of stuck. I'm assuming that they must have been black.
That's what that was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, she says about the girls dancing if they're about her age.
I was struck by how many images she has of the appearance of people, what they wear, how caught up she is in the women's, well, you know, about the flower dresses and the, but all the way through, and then the bracelets, and I thought,
mm-hmm.
through my mind meant, oh, her mother's going to be worried about this girl. She's going to go searching off to find something just because it's different. And then I thought, well, yeah, she is. She really is searching for something, that anything that's out of that closed-in foreign space that's home.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, I was thinking, her mother is going to, I think those bracelets are going to drag her off somewhere on her bike, and she's just going to be, she's so desperate to get out. Kind of a, it kind of makes me nervous or worried that she's just gonna be latching on to any old thing that comes in.
It does remind me very much of how I grew up, sitting outside in the summertime, and the women did very much wear the flower dresses and that sort of thing. As a whole, she seemed to be real. Well, it was real descriptive. Her. Thing what went on Sunday mornings, and how so much of church was just being other than what you were,
mm-hmm.
you know, fitting mm-hmm. into tight clothes and wearing hats and ties, and she, you know, didn't seem like she cared for that at all. There was a, seemed to be a real push in her life to be something that you weren't. Mm-hmm. In one scene where the woman says her husband likes her fat because he don't get jealous.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more than one way to keep a man. I don't know, it seems a little contradictory there.
I can't quite
figure it out. But she's fat because she doesn't want him to be jealous. But then on the other hand, there's more than one way to keep a man.
Mm.
And she doesn't say what that way is.
Mm. Can you tell us something about the author?
No, there was nothing in the short story about the, I mean in the book about the author.
Oh, okay.
I don't know anything
mm-hmm.
about the author. This was taken from a collection of, it's called Breaking the Ice, a collection of African-American short stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's in paperback for some reason.
I wasn't sure.
doesn't even give a year there, does it? So we don't even know when it was written. It sounds pretty contemporary.
Yeah, it sounds, I mean, she talks about those bikes. I mean,
Peugeot.
Yeah. Peugeot. We weren't talking about Peugeots 20 years ago. Can anyone relate to this other than just a black story?
Well, when I was 14, I could ride around the block 6 times without touching the handlebars, and I was really proud of it. And it was an escape for me too, you know, right? You know, in the early teens, I don't know whether other girls identify with that, but you felt crowded at home, you got on your bike and rode as far and as fast as you were thought you could get away with.
Yeah, I think there is a freedom aspect to the bike in that it serves the same function as a car in that, you know, especially with a 10-speed, you can go for miles and see new places, and it's just that freedom.
It's not only what you see, but once you leave the neighborhood, you're no longer associated with that neighborhood, and people see you, and if they see you driving a cool bike, it's like driving a cool car. Mm.
Though it sounded to her like in the closet that she hid back in this corner where she could watch everybody but not be seen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
she had her
and then she specifically says in going to church, what she didn't like about going to church was the being seen, that where they lived, that you... Mm. And it sounded like that's what other people valued, that you had to walk full length of the street to get out to Summit Avenue so everybody saw you in your Sunday clothes, and that's what she particularly disliked. Mm-hmm. And then when she got to this plaza place, she hid herself in this corner where nobody ever saw her.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't thinking of it so much that way as to be seen, but simply not to be identified with where you come from.
Yeah.
Is your...
Well, if everybody sees you, there's no freedom in that, to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
The woman they saw earlier, everyone saw her and they knew what she was, and they treated her accordingly. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a certain freedom in not being seen.
I think because of the expectations of what you're supposed to do or be, you know. It seems like it's in the socialization of the sexes or the genders that comes down the hardest. It seems to me there's a kind of a... What I liked about her was that kind of free spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And the integrity. As you said, that in one way it's such a critique on religion. It should be more countercultural sometimes, you know. There's something so enviable about that spirit, you know. You want to get up and cheer for her, you know.
I think it might have been very beneficial if I'd been exposed to homosexuality at a young age as just, you know, something that some people did and other people didn't, instead of something that was a major taboo problem. I think that might have been a healthy thing for him.
You know, one thing about growing up in poor neighborhoods is that nothing's hidden. You can't push it away and make them go to another part of town. Everything is right. It's mm-hmm. right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to deal with it on the spot. You know, I can remember asking my mother why this guy had bumps up his arm, you know, she told me he did dope, you know, that's what they called it in those days, it's different, you know, small neighborhood, it's like a small town, especially if you're black, you could be in the middle of a city, but if you're black, you can only go so far outside of that and feel comfortable, so, It is very much like a small town, but without the finances to where if you are different, you can go somewhere and have your own bar or your own, you know, you have to mingle with everybody.
I related to her in a different way too. And when I was 14, it was about as different a situation you could be in, you know, white, rural, Scandinavian farming community. I wanted to get away from all that stuff too, but I couldn't get away on a bicycle. Couldn't go far enough. So I'd get away by, I'm dating myself, but with radio, you could bring in the gang fights in L.A. Now that was different, and that was fascinating to me because that was as different from a farming white community as you could get. And then TV brought a whole new world in. But I think part of being 14 is wanting to experience something that's different from what you have lived to that point.
And then no matter where you're at, home is boring compared to someplace else. And then if you move to that place, that too would become, you know, home, and you'd want to visit other places.
Yeah, and for some, and not for everybody.
Yeah.
Because there were some who never had wanted to do anything but be a white Scandinavian farmer. No.
Yeah.
Well, the people who fit in. You know, I mean, if she had been a... and I don't know where this starts, but if she had been a heavy little girl and like the rest of them and had fit in, maybe she would have stayed right there. But see, I don't know where that started, if it started with the bike or it started with her and she got the bike because of it.
But I think she identifies that she has in this pause with these two women has seen something that she does identify with, and one assumes that this will be a future direction for her, because it's not as if these, I mean, she admires the woman who's dressed in jeans like she is. She's just wearing jeans jacket and jeans. She admires this woman that's dressed like she is, but after describing the fanciness of these women in her neighborhood, which she doesn't like, these two women that she does see and identifies with, it's not as if they aren't all done up. You know, she describes them as this one's got silver, more silver bracelets. I mean, this woman is really done up, and the woman in the three-piece suit. You know, in a way, they're just as flashily dressed as the women with the long gloves and the big hats. But that this is something she... Already at 14, there's recognition that, so you know, it's not just the difference between putting on pretenses and being flashed up and all that sort of thing. It's a different way of being and doing.
And like you said, it gave her energy. You know, if something gives you energy, then there's something. You mentioned at the end.
Who mentioned the energy?
That it gave her energy, like when she was pedaling up that hill. She had this burst of energy. So it seemed to be something that was apparently that she got something.
I remember the first time I saw a sister. I was a sister in the community for many years, and I remember the first time I saw a sister. On a stage, she was part of a panel as a biblical scholar. And I was maybe 26 years old at that time, and I was in a master's program in English, and that's all I was thinking of doing. And I remember the first time I saw her, it clicked. It was like, that's what I want to do. And it's like, you need to see examples of that. And I think maybe getting back to what the hardship is, then, it seems to me, is that people don't have a recognition, and maybe for a long time live with a whole part of themselves that's dead. And that's where I think the energy really is. That's her spirituality. Coming alive, and how glorious that is.
Yeah, when it's a delight instead
dread.
Yeah.
Well, I remember one of my students telling, this is a number of years ago, as she was saying she sat in her, she shared this in her journal, that she sat in her class, maybe a junior in high school, and she said, I remember looking out the window and thinking, oh God, I bet I'm lesbian. Yeah? I mean, it's like, it wasn't a happy moment. It was a moment of recognition, realizing all of a sudden she, I mean, it just kind of clicked. She realized that she doesn't feel the way other people feel, and maybe, as a matter of fact, she's lesbian. And she wrote that when we were looking at the text of creation, and all of a sudden started thinking about that myth and claiming herself. But that's what, this is such a wonderful story. I mean, I'm thinking what a wonderful story that is to make available to others who can recognize themselves.
And I don't, I guess there's a part of me that says, you know, I was raised with two older brothers and two younger brothers. I didn't get a sister. I was the only female, well, sibling. I did have a mother. But until I was almost 16 years of age. And so her responses to a great deal of that were things with which I could really relate. Number one, boys were not terribly impressive when you've been changing little boys' diapers for many, many years. And when you live with two older brothers who are 1 and 3 years older than you, and I noticed hers was a two-year-old, one was 2 years older and one was a year younger, you're just not real impressed as far as the glamour, the romance, the mystique. There is no mystique. You know, you've seen them at their best and at their worst, and there's not a lot of difference. And, you know, I mean, they would say the same thing about me, of course. So as far as that kind of sexual arousal for me at age 14, mine was very delayed. It wasn't until I, you know, until much later. But, and so I guess I don't see her necessarily as being drawn towards or assuming automatically that she is, that she has a definite lesbian tendency, but a real awakening just to see that there are differences and that there are options, at this point.
Yeah.
I don't see her as cast in stone one direction or another, but just an awareness that that if boys aren't interesting, well, maybe, possibility, that this exists, and not to feel that, I don't know. I guess I'm not able to express it clearly, but I don't think it that the author necessarily is definitely trying to indicate that is the direction she's going to go, but simply that that is a possibility.
Well, she found what she was looking for. She was looking for something different, something other than where she was, and she found it. Whether she was going to stay with that. I think the title is really interesting too, Johnny Ruth. It's like, even that implies that it could be either way.
Regardless of her orientation, and I don't know that it is clear what it was, like you say, it's refreshing that her attitude was one of just objective curiosity, and there was no judgment there one way or another. It was just curiosity.
But I guess for myself, I wonder how most 14-year-olds would react to that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the culture doesn't really teach us to look away and to pull back and to see that as,
For me at 14, I think I would have already had some strong homophobic prejudices to where I would have reacted from those. Now, maybe that's different for men, but you know, you learn about that stuff right away, and at least in the Midwest.
Yeah. Here's true.
I don't know, at 14 I would have watched anybody kill.
You were so curious.
Yeah, I remember in a theater once. We used to go to the theater every Saturday night. In those days they showed double features for 20 cents. And I can remember at some point it just occurred to me that all the young kids were up front watching the movies. And all of these older people you saw walk in, you never saw up front. And when I turned around and they're all in various corners of the theater making out. And at that point, that came much more interesting. Became much more interesting than anything.
Now how old were you?
I was younger than 14. At that point. But I can remember just like her, my mouth open, watching this guy and this, and I know I was like 13 or 14 at this point, and I just watched. And the guy somehow I guess he just saw me, felt my presence. And he turned around and he said, you lose something, little man? And I go, no. And he said, you got a paper for here? I said, yeah. I gave it to him, and he just kind of gave me this look like, get lost. So I left.
You were real quick.
Yeah, but I was real taken aback by it. I mean, I just, you had heard about it, but you'd never seen it. You know how guys are. I mean, you start talking about, I 11. You start lying about it way before it happens. My thing is, that's the difference between women and men, is that men start lying about it way before it happens. Women start telling the truth about it way after it happens. But that was my, at 14 I would have watched man, woman, I don't care. I would have watched it. But she didn't seem interested in it.
No.
In that. She turned away from that. I mean, I don't know. Because she didn't seem interested. And I could see why she wouldn't be interested in the boys roaming around talking about what they did to girls and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. She didn't like it, even though she wasn't friends with the girls and she didn't like the girls. She didn't like it, and I could see that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe she associated that with the other thing.
Well, it expresses her surprise, her absolute surprise that there are two women. And I guess that, like I said earlier, that's something that I can relate to. With men, that's, I don't know how it was for other women growing up, but as a relatively, by the time I was 14, I knew that there were homosexual males. I was much older before I knew that there were homosexual men. It just was not part of my culture, not part of my, no one ever talked about it. Of course, I've got this nice little age thing where nobody was talking about much of anything then, but at least you did know, you knew about men. But it was, I can remember the first time I read about it, they can't do that.
Well, when I was 19 and saw the movie Advice and Consent, do any of you remember the movie Advice and Consent way back in 1962? That was a little bit of a shocker. I was 19 years old and had to go home and get a dictionary to find out what was going on.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
Did it help?
Well, it explained it.
Girls did not talk about this in the locker room. You know, there really were. And so I guess I really related to the 14-year-old. You know, but it was fun the way she responded to it. Rather than she was in shock, you might say, but it wasn't judgmental. It was just absolute total surprise. Mm-hmm. Just like, I don't know, with some other circumstance.
Yeah, that's, I guess, what I liked about the story is it makes you think back to the time before you, everything kind of percolated through your head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, how cerebral you really get.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was just refreshing to have someone give a genuine response.
Yeah.
Isn't it true?
Yeah.
Like, here we are trying to think about it.
I would really credit the author in this because we know that the author was not 14 years old when she wrote it.
That's right.
To be able to capture that and to present it, that's great.
Well, without being racist, I think that's pretty typical of black people, really. That they, at least the black people that I've been friends with, they just seem, most of them seem to be more grounded in their experience and more able to recall some things. And I don't know why that is. Maybe that's...
It might just be the ones you associate with.
Probably.
I think there is a groundedness, though, a bodiness that many whites don't have. I don't have.
I think it's part of the cultural experience, like what you're saying. You're the neighborhood's so small, so you see everything, and you deal with it immediately. You know, that tends to make a person grow in ways that the rest of us take longer. You know.
I wonder if there's a white culture to that kind of moves us up into our heads. So as a friend of mine said, we're heads on sticks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially goes back to what you were talking about earlier, this concrete mm-hmm. mythological stuff. I think there's a lot of mythology floating around in, and I won't even say just African-American neighborhoods. Jewish neighborhoods and ethnic people who are grounded in their mm-hmm. ethnic. There's something about being white American, which to me sort of implies a concreteness. You know,
yeah.
you deal with everything on this concrete level, and to be, if you want to be white, that's, you got to start thinking like that. You know? You can't use mythological terms. You know,
because it's harder to control.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, if you use this mythological thing and everything's great, my God, you know, the world could just get out of hand.
I'm thinking of the reporting of the war in the Gulf. You know, it's in numbers only. There's no faces, there's no names, it's just numbers. And it's a way to deal with reality easier. There's a wonderful New York Times book review a couple weeks ago. I had this wonderful little piece by Maureen Down where she talked, she was invited to the White House and by the Bushes, and it was supposed to be a kind of close evening with the family. She said, the invitation said there would be a buffet and a movie after. So she went, and she said, as she was going over there, she was thinking of these big steam, you know, silver steamed containers, and, you know, or she's really getting hungry thinking about that. And when she got there, it was only a torte and tea, you know. And she said, a reminder of a saying that there are no cockroaches in a wasp home because there's no food.
Oh dear.
So her advice at the end was, if you're invited to the White House, stop at a deli before you get there. But it has something as far as it is. As you're saying, kind of maybe ethnicity and that has been kind of dominant. The majority of our presidents come out of a white Anglo-Saxon class and background.
Yeah.
And when you think
of course, most Norwegians are white Anglo-Saxon.
Mm-hmm.
Protestant background, and boy, that was the first thing when somebody walked in the door was you started shoving cookies and coffee at.
Yeah, but did they get to be present?
Oh, you were going to say.
I haven't made it yet, no.
I just don't connect to that. Catholic implies food.
Yeah.
In some ways it implies overindulgence in food, mm-hmm. and it implies, it doesn't imply a little and petite. You know, I mean, Jewish women are always going on about their chubby thighs. And
only your friends.
Yeah. And, you know, I've heard, my mother used to say, when my sisters would talk about going on diets, she said, "Don't nothing want a bone but a dog."
Oh, wonderful. You
know, implying that, you know, you don't want to be skinny. A man don't want to skinny. You know, and that kind of thing.
You think Italian, you think food.
Mm-hmm.
You think Mexican, you think food.
Mm-hmm. All of
you think Norwegian, you think coffee. But yeah, there's a lot.
Well, it seems like we've substituted, at least with the generic white cultures, mm-hmm. we've substituted, you know, affluence, things, vacations and so forth for just basic
simple.
Human interactions and simple sharing of food, and you know that there's a poverty there of experience.
It's like you go to visit some houses and they've got these beautiful white walls and things. You walk into the house and it is so sterile. I mean, it's got pictures,
yeah.
It has this, it has this, it has. It doesn't have any good honest dust. You know, there's nothing that makes you feel people actually live there. It's just because everything that shows life is put away. You don't put photographs on the wall because instead of that you put paintings.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Supposedly.
Right. You compare that with the way most of us perhaps were brought up. Of course, I was brought up in poor neighborhoods. I was brought up in needy housing camps. That was my claim to poverty-stricken community.
Well, I suppose we could end here.
That's great.
Thanks, that was wonderful to share.
Yeah. Jan, actually, thanks for reading it. It was marvelous.
Yeah, surprisingly. Well, after all the excuses.
Yeah. Well, I just can't read in that dialect. It's a rhythm. And Robert will tell you I have no rhythm. So, you know, it's very hard for me to read in a rhythmic.